No matter what the calendar might say, spring is definitely beginning to bloom here in Wisconsin, which means that farmers market season and the growing season in general are just around the corner, and it's time to get re-inspired about cooking from farm to table. Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert, keeping you company today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're joined by food writer and chef Ian Nauer to talk about his forthcoming book called The Farm. But first, Steve Paulson joins me in studio. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Veronica. This is the very last day of our spring membership drive. It all ends today, and we are looking for your support. You can make that gift now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And I have to say, we had a goal last hour of 35 pledges. We heard from 34 of you. I mean, I would consider that basically meeting the goal.
Yeah, we're going to round up on this one.
That's right. So anyway, thank you very much for those pledges. If you did give during the last hour, well, guess what? We have a new goal and another 35 pledges for this hour. We need to hear from you. The last chance for you to show your support for Veronica's show. And you can make that pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And on Fridays, we talk about things, I think, that go a little deeper. The news is something we do very well, and we cover a lot of it here on Wisconsin Public Radio. But on Fridays, we try to get at the artists, the writers, the scientists, the philosophers, kind of the big ideas that really give us some traction on understanding ourselves and the world that we live in. These are the ideas that really stick with you that you might chew on over the course of a day or a week or a month, and that might end up changing the way that you think about things. Well, what is that worth to you? Is it worth a pledge? Well, this is the time to do it. This is the last day of our spring membership drive. And you'll want to get that pledge in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, this program, and all the great programs that you listen to on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can get your pledge in at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have something special going on during this drive. We've never done anything like this before. Pledge any amount and you will be entered into a drawing. It's a trip for two on a garden tour of London and the surrounding area, visiting some of the great gardens in that part of England. And you'll be with WPR host Larry Mueller. You can find out the details and make your pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Now, in just a moment, we're going to be talking with Ian Nauer about life on his family farm and his new cookbook that grew out of all the beautiful food he's growing there. It's called The Farm. Discussions like this are possible because of your financial support, directly possible. You know, there's not any sort of wiggle room there. Your dollars equal great radio. Give now at WPR.org. Or by calling 888-202-2552.
And here's a suggestion. You might think about a pledge of $120, which is $10 a month, and choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. Your thank you gift will be in the form of 40 meals for those who are dealing with hunger. And we provide that support to a Wisconsin food bank in your area. Pledge any amount right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And for $120, you can select Food for 40 as your thank you gift.
And the goal that we have for this hour, 35 pledges, is important, and it's not arbitrary. We use each hour to pace ourselves, and there's a dollar amount that gets added in for every one of those hours and goals that we need to meet. And in fact, don't forget the big cheese, Gene Purcell, our executive director of the ECB, was just in, and he was telling us that we do need to step it up to stay on track. He said we are pacing behind, that is his phrase, so we'd like to pace up a little bit. Catch up, move ahead, surge forward, and you can help us do it with your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And this our last day of the spring membership drive.
And I might add the last hour to show your support specifically for what Veronica does. I mean, all these great programs that she brings you, this is the time to make that pledge. You can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just 2 minutes of your time, not much at all. You tell us your name, your contact info, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. And you could consider using your credit card. It does save time, postage, and paper, and it does put your money to work right away. So no matter how you choose to give or how much, take those 2 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can join Aaron from Middleton, who says, Veronica Rickert rocks. I agree with that. And if you share that sentiment, this is your time to make a pledge. Right now, tomorrow is too late. Monday's too late. Today, in fact, this hour is the time to do it. And you can make that pledge of any amount, $60, $120, $500. Make that pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Because you think Wisconsin Public Radio rocks, make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. And Steve, we'll see you back here in a bit.
Okay.
Well, with farmers market season about to kick into gear, it's the perfect time to start imagining those beautiful meals you'll be putting together with all the fresh and local offerings from your market or your garden or your CSA. And here to help us do some of that imagining is chef, food writer, and farmer Ian Naur. Ian is a cook and writer based in Brooklyn, New York, and Naurtown, Pennsylvania. He's written for Bon Appetit, Gourmet, and The Atlantic. And his cookbook, The Farm, is due out this spring. And we want to know, hey, Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And let me just give our phone number here so if people want to call up and ask you questions about what they're growing and some inspiration, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And I'm going to point this out right away, Ian, because you sent us some beautiful recipes. They are up on our Facebook page already at The Veronica Rickert Show.
Oh, cool.
Well, your book, The Farm, is so beautiful. I spent probably much longer than I should have poring over the beautiful recipes and the stories in there, too, because it's really more than recipes. This is really sort of a rich history of your family cooking as well, isn't it?
It was so much fun to write. I got to interview my aunts and uncles and cousins, and it turned out to be such a beautiful portrayal of that. In fact, much prettier than I ever imagined that it would be. And most of that is due to the photography team. It's Christopher Hirschheimer and Melissa Hamilton, and they are famous for their own work, which is the Canal House cookbooks. If you aren't hip to those, you need to order them. They're also beautiful. Hmm. And what's funny is to see this place that I grew up going to, working on. It's a farm. It's dirty. You know, there's mud, there's dust, but they sort of looked at it through such a wonderful spectrum. It was really great to work with them.
Well, tell us about this farm, because this is a farm that has been in your family for generations, and it sounds like you rediscovered it as you got more deeply into food.
That's right. You know, the farm has been in the family since the mid 1600s or something like that.
Wow.
And it's the original family member that came over from Germany. Of course, they pronounced the name Knauer. And there's a Knauer town right there. So it's been passed through generation to generation one way or another and is still in the family. But growing up, you know, I went there to mow the lawn or to help my grandfather dig up potatoes. And when you're a teenager, that's not exactly what you want to be doing with your Saturday afternoons. You know, you'd rather hang out and play Nintendo or whatever. So it was just a workplace when I was growing up, and I didn't really appreciate it for the wonderful heritage that it actually is. And so then, you know, I moved away to go to college, and I moved to New York, and I started to really miss things like fresh peas or tomatoes right off the vine. Or canned peaches that my grandmother would put up in the cellar, and so I started to really ache for it.
Hmm.
You know, it's the way everything goes. You always want what you don't have at the moment. The grass is always greener, and so I started to spend more and more time there. But at the same time, I was living in New York and working at Gourmet magazine. I was really lucky to get this job because I didn't have any formal culinary training, and they. I somehow convinced them to hire me to test the recipes because I would make the same mistakes that the readers at home would make. You know, I wasn't trained in a professional kitchen. I didn't go to culinary school. So I would trip over things that, you know, someone who had more training might overlook or might just take for granted or do the right way without realizing it. So I got to really discover food from an interesting angle. And I got to, you know, test all these different recipes and all these different, you know, cuisines from all over the world. It's a really amazing way to learn how to cook. And so I did that for a couple years, and then I got too good at it. You know, the problem with cooking every day is that you are actually a professional cook, and you learn. You know, you learn to avoid the mistakes that that I would have made otherwise. So they gave me a promotion, and
sounds like a pretty sweet job, I have to say.
It was honestly, it's probably the best job I'll ever have in my life.
Yeah.
They would send me around the world to culinary schools to learn about different cuisines and different techniques, and I spent almost a decade there, really totally immersed in food.
Well, there's a story. I was going to ask you about a particular story before we leave
sure.
The offices of Condé Nast. Now, I think it's Ruth Reichel talks about the day that you dragged a goat carcass into the elevator at the Condé Nast building, and Anna Wintour was in your elevator.
If you saw this in a movie, you would never believe that it could actually happen. I was writing a story with a coworker of mine, Alan Sitzma, who's now at New York Magazine. He runs Grub Street, and we discovered this halal slaughterhouse in Queens, and we went out there and we picked out a goat. And we had it killed for us, and the idea was that we were going to take it to Prospect Park in Brooklyn and invite all our friends and sort of write about the experience of choosing a live animal all the way through to eating it. And it ended up being a really nice piece. But in the process, I wanted to test some recipes. So we come back from this slaughterhouse in Queens, and we had been standing there like witnessing the slaughter, and we smelled like a slaughterhouse, and we have this goat in pieces in garbage bags, right? And it's warm, and it smells like a goat. And so we're standing there in Four Times Square in the Condé Nast offices, and the elevator opens, and we get in, and it's just us in the elevator and the goat, and the doors start to close, and all of a sudden we see this hand reach in. It has like a cup of coffee and a whole bunch of – it's some poor assistant. It's Anna Wintour's assistant, right? And so she comes in, and then Anna comes in right after her, and the doors close. And you see this look on Anna Wintour's face, like she starts smelling the goat. And like she's looking around, like, where is the stench coming from? And like shuffles herself into the corner and makes herself as small as possible.
And I can't imagine why.
Yeah, no, it was amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we exit the elevator and have a really good laugh about it.
But you didn't talk to her? You didn't say, it's not us, it's the goat?
No one talks to Anna Wintour.
Okay.
That's the unwritten rule of Four Times Square.
That's hilarious. Well, I love that story. And you've got similar stories. Well, maybe not quite quite like that. But I was thinking about the time you and your cousin Leif, I think it was, got pulled over for having a dead pig in the trunk.
Yeah. That's another good one. Somehow all my good stories involve dead animals. So every year we have a little reunion for all my cousins. There are 24 of us. It's a big family. And so we all get together and we roast a pig. And there's a local butcher near the farm. And we go and we get our pig and we pick it up and we put it in the back of Leif's pickup truck. And we're driving back and we need to stop and get some ice and probably some beer. So we stop at the grocery store and the plastic that was covering up the pig got shifted in the wind. And as we're coming out of the store with ice, there's a guy who's sort of like watching us walk to the truck, and he comes over and he looks in the back of the pickup truck. Before he even looks in, he's like, hey, guys, what's this? It looks like you have pink flesh in the back of your pickup truck. And so we had some explaining to do that we were going to roast a pig. He turned out to be a plainclothed police officer wondering why there was a dead body in the back of the pickup truck.
Yuck.
So yeah, we invited him, but he didn't come.
Well, there is a picture of the pig roast in your book and the recipes that go with that day. And I'm not much of a pig-eating person myself, but what really caught my eye was the macaroni and cheese that got served there. And it does seem like a huge feast. And then you do have about maybe 10 recipes or so for the pig as well. Do you want to walk us through some of the recipes from that day?
Sure. It varies from year to year. The year that I was writing this book, we have a friend who we call Big Phil. He's a huge guy, and he came down, and he's a plumber. He's sort of a handy guy to have around, but he also is passionate about cooking, and he made this mac and cheese, which was incredible, and it used up basically every pan in the kitchen when he did it. But the result was just like it's the best mac and cheese I've ever had. You know, it's heavy on the cheese. He's got a cornbread crust on top. He uses garlic and fresh thyme right from the garden.
And smoked cheese, right?
Smoked cheese, yeah, exactly. So you get this layers and layers of flavor when you eat this mac and cheese. It's the first dish to be emptied at the pig roast.
Yeah, I can see why. And the cornbread is sort of unusual on that, isn't it? I don't usually see cornbread toppings on mac and cheese.
You don't. Usually it's just regular breadcrumbs. But the cornbread gives it a little sweetness and some crunch. So it's a really interesting twist on that classic.
And I know that because of how involved you've gotten in, you know, you're a hunter and you mentioned with a goat wanting to really be involved in that animal's life and then honoring it as you eat it. And you have many recipes there where you want to use the entire pig. You want to pick out a favorite one and tell us about it?
Well, the thing about roasting a pig is that no matter how many people you have to eat it, you are guaranteed to have leftovers. So we all end up dividing, you know, whatever's left of the shoulder and the hams and all this, you know, all this leftover delicious pig meat. And instead of, you know, just eating it on sandwiches, I mean, it's great that way. What I like to do is make a chili from it. So I use the pig that's already cooked and keep cooking it until it just completely falls apart in this chili. It's a really great way to use up. I mean, you could use any animal. You could use lamb or beef. They're sort of interchangeable, but it's a great way to use up those leftovers.
Now, getting to some of the fruits and veggies that you grow on the farm. You know, for me, if I could only eat one fruit for the rest of my life, it would be strawberries. So I had to gravitate to your strawberry cream cheese pie recipe. And it turns out, I think this is one that your grandmother had made.
That's right. Yeah, it's one of her recipes. I asked some of my aunts for their favorite recipes of hers. And she was, you know, she was a mother of seven, so she was always in the kitchen. And sort of gravitated towards sweets, and her desserts are really killer. And this pie in particular, it uses strawberries in an interesting way. You cook some of them, and they sort of become a sauce, and then you add some gelatin to that, and in a pie tin you have a crust, and then you have a layer of cream cheese underneath that, and then this gelled strawberry, basically a jello on top of that. What it gives you is this really interesting savory-sweet balance, sort of a counterpoint in flavor. It always raises eyebrows. And you can use any other fruit, too. She used to use blueberries a lot as well.
That sounds beautiful. And there's another pie. Now, that one you've adapted from your grandma's recipe. There's another that is, I gather, all your recipe. It's the one we've got up on our Facebook page right now. It is the rhubarb pie. Tell us about that
one. Yeah, so this is a good one too. This is a sort of a very rustic pie. It's almost like a crostata, and there's some sour cream in there too. And so, you mentioned my cousin Leif before. He is his favorite. It's a vegetable, but his favorite fruit, we'll call it, is rhubarb. And so I made this. I just sort of threw together this rhubarb pie one day to use up some rhubarb to get some dessert on the table. And Leif basically ate the whole thing like a pizza. just cut it into wedges and picked it up and ate it hand to mouth.
Oh, it does look delicious. And rhubarb, I don't know. Do you have it coming up at your farm yet? We're having a really early spring in Wisconsin, but I don't think there's rhubarb yet.
We don't have it yet, but we're also having an incredibly early spring here in Pennsylvania.
What do you look forward to? What is the first crop that you just can't wait to taste?
Oh, the watercress. We have this plot of watercress that grows wild in the woods. Well, it grows wild now. Chances are, generations ago, someone probably planted it there, and it just happened to be the perfect spot for watercress. And it's always sort of the arbiter of spring. It's the first thing that turns green, and after eating potatoes and kale all winter, I can't wait to get that really peppery watercress in a salad.
So you use it in a salad. What else do you do with it?
I make a dish that's sort of like creamed spinach. It's creamed watercress. Actually, Ruth Reichel inspired this dish. She it's one of her favorite springtime side dishes. So you cook the watercress and you puree it with a potato. And the potato actually adds some thickening to it. You know, it doesn't taste like potato, but it gives it a really nice texture.
Oh, that's interesting. So you've got – it's almost like a pesto almost?
Well, it's more like cream spinach, this dish.
See, like
so it's really
spinach.
Good with steak.
It's like a side dish.
Exactly. Huh. Although a pesto would be a great idea.
Well, you
have to write that down and put it in the next book.
I was thinking about that because you do have a lot of unusual pestos in this cookbook. You have, for one example, a Parmesan and corn pesto that you serve over a pasta that sounds delicious.
Yeah. You know, I mean, pasta is classically an herb and a nut sauce, but I really love sort of playing with techniques like that. So for this one, I pureed corn with some cheese, and it ended up being just really this silky sauce, and the pasta sucks it up, and you really get this fresh corn flavor with your pasta. It's definitely unusual, but at the same time, it's really familiar. You know, you take a bite of that, and it really says summer.
Did you have to learn a lot about gardening as you launched into this farm and planting? I know your sisters were helping you, and maybe they brought some knowledge. But you know, for me, the first time I tried a community garden plot, it was not altogether successful. And I think mostly what we got, we sort of swiped as we were weeding. And what was that learning curve like for you?
It continues. I think I could probably study gardening for the rest of my life and not be an expert. There are just so many variables. You know, nature makes it really interesting for you. It either rains too much or not enough, or you get too much sun or not enough, or the rabbits come in and eat everything. So there's always a wild card there. Any luck that I have is just that. It's luck.
Well, and you do have the legacy of the family garden to keep you going. And you do tell a beautiful story about finding an ancient stalk of asparagus that
yes.
has really been meaningful for you. Tell us about that asparagus plant.
This crown of asparagus, I had no idea it was there. It was in the middle of the field. Another cousin of mine, Ryan, is really into fruit trees. And so we were planting some fruit trees one year, and we planted a pear tree, and the asparagus must have been there. I just didn't see it. And then one day I walk out into the field years later, and I check on the orchard, the trees, see how they're coming along. And there at my feet is a stalk of asparagus. I mean, it looks like grocery store perfect asparagus, but there's just one stalk. And so I didn't know what to do with it. I wanted to, you know, figure out where it came from, what the story was. So I called my father. And he said that it must have been my grandfather that planted the asparagus there because that was one of the crops that he really enjoyed growing. And asparagus, if you plant it, it comes up year after year. They don't usually last 30 years, but they can. They can last 50 years. And so I wanted to sort of save this plant, you know, and sort of make it give it a place where it could do its thing and continue living. So I dug it up from the field and I put it in the garden where, you know, it would have a little less competition from weeds and that sort of thing. And sort of hope for the best. I planted some more asparagus around it to maybe encourage it to keep going.
The next year,
I walked out and every day I checked to see if the asparagus was there. And sure enough, it came up again. So I really sort of relish this idea that I get to eat the asparagus that my grandfather planted. And maybe my grandchildren will get to eat the asparagus that I planted. Mm. It sort of, you know, goes hand in hand with this generational legacy of the place.
Well, we're talking this hour with Ian Knauer. He's a cook and writer based in Brooklyn, New York. And we're talking about his gorgeous new cookbook. It's due out very soon this spring, and it's called The Farm. And if you've got a question or comment for Ian about something you're growing or how to use a particular piece of produce or just want a little bit of inspiration about how to use a favorite ingredient, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert with Steve Paulson, and this is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the last day of our spring membership drive. Listener donations are the foundation of our budget, about 40%, and that's why we're asking for your gift now. If you've been meaning to give, do it now, because the drive ends today. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for 20 more pledges in the next 30 minutes. Thank you very much if you've already given. If not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Now, public radio listeners, they often share common experiences, and one of those is that moment you find yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion. Probably your business could lie elsewhere. Maybe you're trying to get some cleaning done or get some chores, but the radio's right there, so you want to stay listening to the radio, or you're in your car and you can't get out and you sit in your driveway. Well, these are things that happen when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. You appreciate the guest knowledge and also the caller's questions and views. And because that's happened to you, because I told that story and you went, ding, 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 that's completely me. Well, that's a reason to make your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this membership drive, we would like to say thank you for your support in a special way. When you pledge $120 to support WPR programs, you can choose as a thank you gift that will provide 40 meals to a Wisconsin food bank near you.
So let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to those in need in your community. You can pledge $120 and choose along with that food for 40 as your thank you gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Of course, the wonderful thing about making a pledge is that you're not just supporting one program. I mean, yes, you're supporting Veronica's show, which is wonderful. You're also supporting Larry Mueller's show. You're supporting, to the best of our knowledge, A Prairie Home Companion, the news magazines that you hear from NPR. You're supporting all of that with your single pledge. And we count on you to step forward and to make that pledge right now.
Wisconsin Public Radio gives you a window to the world like no other. I mean, I don't know about you, but I never feel like there's enough time in the day, and it's hard for me to go sifting through everything that's out there and decide what's important for me to read, what I need to know to make sense of the world. But the beautiful thing is that Wisconsin Public Radio does that for me. It does it for you. We sift through everything for you so that we can bring you what you need to know, what will interest you, ignite your imagination, and maybe help you be a better citizen. So support the exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, I should also mention that new members are very important to Wisconsin Public Radio. So a big thank you to all of the first-time donors who have pledged so far this hour. The more people who support WPR, the more stable is our financial situation here, and the better able that we are to withstand those ups and downs that come with the economy, swinging one way or the other, and it keeps us strong, it keeps us stable.
So if you've never given before, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the same strong, reliable station that you depend on. You get to decide the amount, whatever feels right for you, what feels comfortable for your budget and how much you listen, and then give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the easiest way to make sure that your support for WPR is always current is to become a sustaining member. Being a sustainer means that your gift could be $5 a month, $100 a month, or anything in between. It automatically renews every year.
Well, being a sustainer means no more renewal notices in the mail, and it helps Wisconsin Public Radio save money, which makes your contribution go that much farther. So make the switch and make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have some business we have to take care of. We need 20 more pledges by the end of the hour. 25 more minutes, 20 pledges. We just heard from another person, 19 more pledges.
Yay.
You can help us out. You can step forward right now with a pledge at any level, a $60 pledge, a $120 pledge, a $500 pledge. Make that pledge now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And Steve, have we mentioned that it's the last day of the drive? I can't remember if that's come up or not.
I think we have mentioned that,
Veronica. Okay, good. I'm glad because that's important. It's the last day of the drive. So make that pledge. Make a difference. We are in the dwindling hours of the spring membership drive. So get it done and feel good about it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. And thank you, Steve. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you back here in a little bit.
Okay, good.
And we head back now to our guest, Ian Naur. He's a cook and a writer based in Brooklyn, New York. And his new cookbook is due out imminently. It's called The Farm. And it's a completely gorgeous feast for the eyes. We do have pictures and recipes up on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickard Show. And Ian, before we went to break, we were talking about this asparagus plant that was probably planted by your grandfather. And what you've done with it, you planted it with some of its brethren in the garden. So what do you like to, how do you like to prepare that asparagus? How do you eat it?
any way you can imagine. The first thing I like to do, and this is what I do with the one stalk that pops up from my grandfather's plant, is I shave it really thinly and toss it with a really simple vinaigrette. It is such a refreshing salad. But asparagus is very versatile. You know, you can steam it. It's so easy. It takes to just about any way that you want to cook it. Even puree is great.
So shave it. What do you use, a grater?
Well, I actually use a really sharp chef's knife. But if you don't trust yourself and want to save your fingers, I really like an adjustable blade slicer, like a Benreiner is my favorite. They're not that expensive. They are razor sharp, and you get paper thin slices of whatever you want to slice.
What's in your simple vinaigrette?
Usually mustard, a little lemon juice, or apple cider vinegar is a favorite of mine, and a little olive oil.
That sounds yummy.
Well, yeah, you just keep it simple. That's the best thing to do.
We have a caller here. Let's go to Charna joining us from Plymouth. Hi, Charna.
Oh, hi.
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, Jerusalem artichokes are ready to be dug up now, and I was wondering how you would prepare them. I've used like water chestnuts. They taste very much like those. So,
sure.
Like, I've used them raw, and I was wondering if you ever cooked them or used them in any other way.
I do. I do cook them. I also love them raw. In fact, yesterday I had them two different ways. I had them shaved and pickled in sort of a sweet pickling brine. And then I also had them steamed. And then after they were steamed, they were smashed, just sort of gently smashed, and then deep fried. And they were served with a mayonnaise. And they were incredible. I mean, you get this really soft inside and then a crunchy exterior.
That does sound good. I hope you enjoy making that one, Sharna. And what else are you looking forward to coming up, Ian?
Oh, let's see. Well, lettuce. Lettuce was sort of this eye-opening thing for me when I started growing it the first time. It actually tastes like nothing I had ever had before. The stuff that you buy at the store, it tastes like cardboard compared to lettuce that you grow. The difference is astonishing. And the first time I had a salad that I had grown, I had to put my fork down and stare at the plate. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it tastes just like you can imagine lettuce is supposed to taste like. But if you never tasted it before, it's really eye-opening.
So interesting. I mean, I think I've had good lettuce before, but I don't know if the lettuce I've had has been as good as your lettuce. I don't know.
When you have it, you know it. It's just one of those things. It's like falling in love. It's like true love. Like, you know it when it's right there in front of you.
I love that you just said lettuce is like true love. Your wife must love that one. That must be some lettuce. So what is your favorite variety of lettuce?
I really like softer leafed lettuces, like Boston style or bib style. There's one called tennis ball, which is a very small head. It gets to be about the size of a softball when it's mature. And it's perfect for a salad for one. So you can go out and pick one head of lettuce and eat it. And it's, you know, sort of a fun way to make a salad.
Okay, so if you've got this rock star lettuce, how do you serve it so that it really shines?
As simply as possible. Just a really simple vinaigrette, like the one that I mentioned before. Maybe some of that shaved asparagus in there and some cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, that does sound nice. Well, I want to talk about, and this is not really overtly in your book, but you are a beekeeper. And you have some amazing stories that we found about singing to bees. And
yes.
Tell us about that, would you?
When I was a kid, I was a teenager. I must have been 13 or something. My grandfather always kept honeybees, and he had a very mild stroke. But it made me realize that I wanted to spend a little more time with him. So I asked him if he would teach me how to keep the bees. And, of course, he said yes. And we worked that summer, and I got stung quite a bit. And as it turns out, at the end of the summer, I got stung too much, and I ended up having a really severe allergic reaction to the bees. And, you know, I had to have a shot of adrenaline. It was scary.
Yeah.
But the problem was that I was hooked. Bees are fascinating to keep. So I didn't want to stop keeping bees. So, you know, I went to an allergist, and I got shots for years to become immune to it. And so now I can keep the bees and not have to worry. Except for the fact that, you know, you always worry a little bit if you've had a reaction like that. So I learned these little techniques to calm the bees down. but actually I'm probably calming myself down. So when I'm in a hive and they start to get a little agitated, you can hear it. The buzz changes from this low hum to sort of an agitated buzz. I start singing to the bees. And it doesn't matter what I sing. It could be rubbish. It could be any song that pops into my head. And it probably relaxes me. And they pick up on that. They are very, very sensitive to the way that you feel. You know, you've heard that before. You know, bees and dogs can sense fear. It is absolutely true.
I actually hadn't heard that about bees. I mean, that was so interesting to me that you say the bees are these emotional savants and can pick up on the slightest ripple in your emotional life.
It's really true. And the reason that people get so into beekeeping is because you interact with the bees. If you are having sort of a crazy, hectic day and you open up the beehive, the bees will pick up on that energy and they'll become agitated and scared themselves and they'll be apt to sting you. But if you're relaxed, if you are sort of even meditative, they will react to that as well. And they really they're so sensitive to that. One of the beekeepers I know calls it therapy. He goes into his hive and he's forced to relax. And if he doesn't force himself to relax, he gets stung. You know, that's the lesson there.
Oh, that's funny. Bee therapy. We could be onto something here.
That's right.
Well, you write that bees don't have ears, which I did not know. Bees don't have ears. So when you're singing to them, you're literally just singing to yourself.
That's right. They can't hear me. I'm sure that they can feel the vibrations of my voice. But really, I'm the one who hears the song. So I am actually singing to myself. And it calms me down.
So you must make some beautiful honey that you like to cook with. How do you like to use that honey?
I use it as my primary sweetener. I drizzle it on yogurt for breakfast. I cook with it. I bake cakes with it. I use it in ice cream. Honey lavender ice cream is one of my favorites. And then I also make mead with it. You know, I water it down and add some bee pollen and ferment it with champagne yeast. And it ends up being this really delicate wine.
Oh, that does sound good. And I saw the recipe for honey cake on there. How does that – what goes into that honey cake?
It's a pretty simple cake. Your standard ingredients, flour, baking soda, baking powder, a little bit of honey for sweetness. And the nice thing about honey cakes is that honey actually absorbs humidity. So when you bake with honey, you'll have a great cake right out of the oven. But if you let it sit for a day, it becomes uber moist. It's really delicious.
Hmm. So are you someone who tries to use honey, in place of sugar for health reasons, or do you just love honey and the fact that your bees made it?
I just love honey. That's the truth. I mean, I also like sugar in certain instances, and I don't avoid it. But yeah, the flavor of honey is really what I'm after. And what's so interesting about honey is that it varies in flavor from place to place, of course, because there's different bloom in different places. But it also varies from time to time. So if I take honey in the beginning of the summer from my hive, it will taste totally different than the honey that I take at the end of the summer because you get different flowers in there.
Mm. Well, I want to talk about another recipe. And this is the second of the recipes that's up on our Facebook page right now. Sounds simple, but it also sounds really delicious. Radishes with bacon butter.
Yeah, this is really simple, but also delicious. I got the inspiration from a trip I took to Germany, where they served radishes with schmaltz. It was rendered pig fat instead of butter. You know, it's a very French thing to do to have a plate of radishes for breakfast and some butter and some sprinkling of sea salt. It's sort of this very sophisticated Parisian way to start out the day. But this German take on it used pig fat. And that sort of got me thinking about, different flavors, different schmears that you can serve with your radishes. So I got back to the States and I started, playing with this idea of like this souped up butter. So you cook some bacon off, and then you blend that bacon with the butter in like a food processor, and you can do it by hand too. And you add some caraway seed and some parsley and a shallot and a little bit of lemon juice, and you get these really complex flavors happening in there, and they're the perfect sort of condiment to these crisp radishes.
Mm, that does sound good. Do you think you could use that butter on anything else?
I use it on everything.
Bacon, it's bacon butter. Why can't you use it?
Yeah, well, it's the best butter you've ever had.
Well, you were mentioning the schmaltz, the fat that you use, the rendered, I guess it would be pig fat in that case, but you also have a recipe in your cookbook, The Farm, for, you call it, is it the magic fat recipe or something like that?
Well, it is pretty magical. Yeah, I call it master fat.
Oh, sorry, master fat. And slightly different, yeah.
Right. I got the inspiration for the name from a chef in New York named Zach Palacio, and he has a restaurant called Fatty Q. And what they do there is they do a lot of barbecue, and they slow cook a lot of different animals. And, of course, each animal renders fat. So they put it all in one big bucket. And, you know, they've got lamb fat and beef fat and pig fat and everything else in there. And they call it master fat. And so I started doing this at home too because rendered animal fat is delicious to cook with. You know, bacon fat is a great way to sear off a steak. But the beauty of master fat is that it's all in one container. So one, it doesn't take up too much space in the fridge. And two, you get all these different flavors melting into one.
Hmm. How long does it keep, did you say?
Well, I keep it in constant rotation. So every time I cook bacon, I add the fat and I melt it down and, you know, anything. And then I always scoop out and use that to sear things. So it keeps pretty much forever if you're using it constantly.
Uh-huh. And one other part of the cookbook that we haven't highlighted much yet is the fact that your grandma was a huge preserver. She had canned goods that your grandfather ate off of for years, it sounds like, after she had passed away. And this has become important to you, too. And I think the canning is making a comeback. Tell us about the sorts of canning things you do.
I try to can everything. Because the beauty of having a garden or even going to the farmer's market or belonging to a CSA is that you are getting your produce and your fruit at its absolute peak. There is nothing better than a perfectly ripe tomato. The thing is, though, I also like perfectly ripe tomatoes in February, mm-hmm. and you can't find them. You know, they taste like cardboard in this part of the country. But if you take them when they're perfectly ripe and you put them in a can, then you have that. And they taste like that summer sunshine when you open it up in February and make a pasta sauce out of it. So I try to do that with as much as I possibly can. You know, fruits and vegetables and green beans and okra, you name it. I even make my own ketchup.
Your own ketchup. What is in your own ketchup?
Well, tomatoes to start. And different herbs and spices and a lot of roasted garlic, some vinegar, a little bit of sugar. And that all just cooks down on the stove for a couple hours until it's a really thick paste. I have to admit, it is sort of a mess. So be prepared. You're gonna want to wipe down your stovetop afterwards. But once you put it in jars, and I put it in half pint jars, so you know I don't have a big jar of ketchup that I need to go through. You use it the way that you use ketchup, hot dogs, hamburgers. It's delicious.
Mm. Well, Ian, it has been such fun to talk with you, and I can't wait to start cooking from your cookbook. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Ian Knauer, our guest this hour. We've been talking about his new cookbook that's due out very soon. It's called The Farm, and he is a food writer and, of course, a cook based in Brooklyn, New York, and Knauertown, Pennsylvania. He's written for Bon Appetit, Gourmet, and The Atlantic. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert with Steve Paulson, and this is the last day of the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. We're here to raise the money WPR needs to pay for the programs that keep you in the know and entertained. That is how public radio works. The people who use it help pay for it. Maybe you've been meaning to give? Well, do it now on this last day of the drive at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And joining us in the studio again, we heard from the illustrious Gene Purcell last hour. He is back, our executive director of the Educational Communications Board, and I'm guessing you've got an update, Gene.
Indeed, I do. And this time I'm the unillustrious Gene Purcell. I can change personalities like that.
Wow.
It's the spring membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's important because we raise a pretty significant part of our annual budget. But here's the thing. Those of you who have been listening during the course of the week know that we've been raising money all week long, and this is it. This is the last day of the drive. It ends by 7 o'clock tonight, and thanks to everyone who has made a pledge so far, we do appreciate that. But given all the work, all the efforts, we are still 600 pledges or so behind where we need to be today. And so what we need to do is kind of bring it up a notch for the next couple hours and get up back on track by 7 o'clock tonight. 7 o'clock tonight. So there you go.
And we have a very specific goal for this particular hour. In fact, we have about 6 minutes left or so. We need to hear from 9 more of you to reach our overall goal of 35 pledges for the hour. Your pledge is really important. It helps pay for the programs you count on, helps pay for this hour, what you've been listening to with Veronica Rickert. Thank you very much if you have already given. If not, this is the time to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You heard it there from the mouth of the big cheese, Gene Purcell. We need to step it up. We need to make it a little more intense as we finish up this drive to make up some ground. We'll do it with your help because we know you love Wisconsin Public Radio. That is why you are listening and enjoying that conversation we had with Ian Knauer about local food and farming. Well, now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs that you enjoy every day, and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, it really comes down to what you think Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you. And we are actually asking you to put a dollar value on that because that helps keep things going here. We might suggest a pledge of $120 or more because that will give you, as a thank you gift, food for 40. This thank you gift provides 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. You can find out more information about Food for 40 and to make your pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
This July, WPR's Larry Mueller would love to have you and a guest join him at the world's largest flower show in London's Hampton Court Palace. Pledge now to our spring membership drive and you're automatically entered to win 2 tickets. Explore private gardens, palaces, and castles with Larry and your fellow WPR listeners. For a chance to win 2 free tickets, pledge right now. No contribution is necessary to win. Visit WPR.org for details.
And you can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You could be the one having a blast with Larry Mueller in London. When you make your pledge, you'll be entered into that drawing. I'm Veronica Rickert with Steve Paulson. We're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe your gift is $50 or $100. Maybe you can afford $500. Well, whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you decide the amount of your pledge. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to support non-commercial radio. And here's an idea. If you can, consider a gift of $100 a month or more.
Your gift of $1,200 for the year will help pay for those who can't afford to support Wisconsin Public Radio right now. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Get your pledge in on this, the last day of our spring membership drive, with your pledge of any amount.
And you might wonder what your pledge pays for. Well, it pays for the people who work here, producers, hosts, pays for lots of other stuff too. We rely on newspapers, magazine subscriptions to be able to research the topics of the day. It pays for the internet services that we have, not just for finding out information to help us produce the programs, also to help deliver our content online. So it's, you know, you can hear lots of things, not just over the radio, but online. That all costs money. And that's why we're asking for your support right now. Your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps pay for all of these things.
And as someone with little ones running around my house, I encourage a donation to keep Wisconsin Public Radio on the air for your little ones, the little ones in your family who are listening. We all know that these little ones have big ears and they're paying attention. They're already thinking about the world. Thanks to Wisconsin Public Radio, you've got it on and they're soaking it up. So make a pledge for the little ones in your life that you want to teach how to think, how to listen, how to be an engaged citizen in the world at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
Now, we only have a couple of minutes left to ask for your support right now. This is your last time to show your support for Veronica's program in particular. And I might say that, in case you don't know it, Veronica wears two hats here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Not only does she host this program, she is also my colleague on To the Best of Our Knowledge. And she is a wonderful producer, incredibly creative producer. And you hear that creativity, that originality on this program. And this is your chance to support Veronica's show. Top of the hour, we move on to other things. This is your time right now. We're pushing to reach that goal of 35 pledges. We're almost there. Five more to go. Will you be one of those five people to make your pledge? And you can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
That's right. We are in the final 2 or 3 minutes of this hour, so get that pledge in. You will feel good about it. We know that people who contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, well, they keep on doing it because they find that it feels right and it feels good. I mean, there's a first time for everything. If you're a new member, try it and see how it feels and how you feel when you listen to the radio. We're pretty confident that you'll feel good about it. But get your pledge in at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a pledge of any amount. It could be a $60 pledge. It could be a $120 pledge. It could be a $500 pledge. The important thing is to make that contribution right now to support what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.
Thank you for your pledge.